You can't change the product, but you can change what you're focusing on.
Hi, Lee Brooks here, founder of Cromulent Marketing, and you're listening to episode 2 of the Cromunity Podcast. I know you have a choice between podcasts, and I appreciate you choosing this one. On this episode, I'm joined by Warren Pamikoff, product marketing manager at Magnet Forensics.
How are you doing, Warren?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on. So let's get right into it. You're a product marketer here at Magnet Forensics. And similar titles can mean different things at different companies. So what would you say you do here?
It's a good question. So I think generally I've tried to take what I learned from past jobs, as there was actually no product marketing before I got here. So I kind of got to build the program up from the ground up and really kind of hone in on things that I thought were the most important for our company. So really focusing on deriving a clear message and value prop out of our products, because there was a lot of competing messages, and really focusing on sales enablement and making sure that our sales team knew how to speak to our buyers. And that was kind of the main focus of things that I got here. So focusing on data sheets and value props and messaging and clear and concise presentations that everyone could use.
Okay, so focusing on those long list of things that you did. Cool, and you've been here about a year and a half?
Yeah.
And you mentioned sort of learning things from past roles. What is a career path that brought you to this point? Because I know a lot of people in the tech community come from sort of different directions.
Yeah, so actually I've had a pretty wild ride of jobs here. I actually started out in HR, which was very interesting. Started out doing business partner advisor roles, so writing best practices with companies.
And was that at BlackBerry, or was that before?
That was at BlackBerry. Okay. Yeah, and then from there, I ended up doing analyst relations, kind of niche field that is a bit of a combination of product marketing and PR and account managing, essentially.
Okay.
So just building up the relationships with the big analyst firms like Gartner's and Forrester's and IDC's, making sure they're up to date on products, presenting, you know, your value props and getting their feedback on the product, which then led me to product marketing. And I think having that kind of varied background has really, really helped me, because I got exposed to multiple different areas in the business. And I learned kind of how to interact with different parts of the business. And then I think, you know, just being in those different roles and very process oriented in HR versus, you know, some of the more account management and PR aspects of analyst relations to more of the product aspect and product marketing really kind of helped round out my skill set.
It's always neat talking to people and hearing how those different backgrounds, they always seem to bring something in that enriches, you know, the capacity or the capability to do the job. Like, very few of us that I've talked to in our community, I went to school for marketing, or I did a marketing diploma, and then I got into marketing, and marketing's all I've done. It's like, okay, well, journalism or HR or sociology or engineering, and we bring a lot of different things to the table.
Absolutely. I think you almost need that now. You need to have that varied background, because you need to kind of be able to go with the flow. I think that's probably the best experience I had at BlackBerry, is I think every year something monumental happened at the company,
yeah,
or my job completely changed.
Yeah. And like you said, with the analyst relations, it's telling the story, but you have to really understand what that audience is interested in. And similarly, I think you compared it to PR communications.
Yeah.
So being able to understand an audience and tweak a story to their interests so that it'll sort of be a mutual benefit to both parties.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was really the key, because each firm was looking for something different.
Like each analyst firm.
Each analyst firm, yeah, kind of focuses on different things, and you had to kind of know exactly what you needed to turn up. Like, you can't change the product, but you can change what you're focusing on. You know, some might be all about, in the analyst world for the product I was working on, EMM, some were all about containment and container solutions, so you really needed to turn that up in order to pique their interest. Whereas others wanted to just hear about, you know, native capabilities on the phone, how to manage apps without using a container solution, so you really needed to turn that up, or else, you know, they'd think you were out of date. So it depended on which analyst you were talking to. Like I said, you couldn't change the product, but you could definitely skew the presentation and skew the pitch to be what their focus and their research,
yeah,
was on.
So your main message is consistent, but you're, yeah, sort of highlighting different aspects of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And which role was it where you became close personal friends with Edward Norton?
That was in the seating role, when we were giving phones out ahead of BlackBerry 10 to celebrities and influencers to make sure that they had a good positive experience with the phone, so we could get some press out of them. And Ed Norton, you know, I can actually say, he is exactly how you would imagine him in real life. I used to come home to multiple phone messages. He was very friendly. but exactly like he plays in the movies.
So not so much an actor as just a beer.
That's a good way of putting it.
For our listeners who aren't familiar, can you tell us a little bit about Magnet Forensics?
Sure. So Magnet Forensics is a digital forensics software company. And so what we do are we are the only solution out there that combines computer, cloud, and smartphone forensics into the same case. So if you have to get evidence from a computer, a cloud service like Dropbox or Office 365, or a smartphone, whether that be iOS or Android, we help you extract that information off the device, and then we surface up what we call artifacts to give you a great starting point for your investigation. So with other tools, they'll give you a long list of what the file system has, and you'll have to navigate it. But with our solution, we actually surface things like chats, photos, videos, so you don't have to dig through the file system. It's all kind of laid out in the common kind of app look that you would expect this day and age.
Okay. Yeah, and that's a neat point. I read something the other day that nothing impacts B2B expectations as much as consumer experiences nowadays. Right? So people are familiar with using apps and interfaces and really beautifully designed products and in their own life, and they want that convenience when they're using something in their professional life.
I would absolutely agree to that, and we've actually seen a bit of a trend with our customers because the younger examiners just expect that, and they're much more like, why would I ever want to spend my entire day using piece together tools in the command line when I can get something with a beautiful UX and it's got things categorized for me and I can get what I need to faster. Like, there's no need to do it the hard old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
So there is definitely a disconnect between younger users and older. And one comment I wanted to bring up just when you talked about using the app icons or apps itself is I've actually talked to officers who don't actually know the name of an app, but they recognize the icon because it shows up in their results. They're like, I know what that ghost is. We have to investigate the ghost all the time, and that's Snapchat.
Yeah, icons work. And so you mentioned officers and investigators. So your customers are law enforcement, intelligence, enterprise, are they all of the above, some of the above?
All of the above, yes. It just really skews what they're looking for and the types. So types of investigations that they do. So, you know, officers will do everything from, you know, crimes against children to, you know, drugs, gang violence, burglaries, things like that, like major crimes. Whereas in the corporate world, it's a lot more on things like data exfiltration, root cause analysis after a breach. And then typically on the law enforcement side, you're mainly nowadays investigating smartphones. Whereas on the corporate side, it's much more about the laptop and lately mainly Office 365 because everything's stored in the cloud. Okay. So you need to combine the computer and the
corporate, it's like exfiltration of data. And imagine a cloud really complicates. You can't just go and plug in a laptop and see what's been going on.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of companies, whether they're Office 365 or even G Suite, almost all of the files are stored in the cloud. So when you're doing an investigation and you...
Files are in the computer. Not anymore.
You just take them and put them on the line.
Yeah.
But a lot of the investigations, you need that cloud access because you want to see things, you know, in the audit logs of, you know which IP addresses your employees usually access their files from and what times they usually get them from. And if you're getting a malicious actor from China or Russia from a foreign IP address that's not really normal at a weird time of night, and they've, you know, accessed, tried the password 3 or 4 times and failed and finally got in. These are the things you can see with cloud logs that you wouldn't have been able to traditionally see, you know, as easily and quickly if you were just looking at one's computer.
Okay, so you're selling solutions to a range of organizations and even a range of teams and personnel and experience levels in terms of technical skills. Right, from relatively less familiar with technology to experts. How does that impact your marketing strategy or your product marketing activities?
I think it really impacts it. Like, so what we've tried to do here, when we started, it was almost pure law enforcement and our user was our buyer. So it was a very easy sell. And we actually had a very focused product at the start. We were known, our initial product was IEF, Internet Evidence Finder, and now we have Axiom, which is our new version of that. But IEF was basically used by officers to find internet evidence, and that was it. So if you needed to like get Google searches or look at chat histories, that's what you used our product for. So everyone got it, whether you were technical or just a beginner.
Now that we've... Just because it was so straightforward.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't really have to explain anything.
So they just got inserted in the workflow, so you use this case for the whole case, but when you do the internet stuff, you use IEF. Mm-hmm. But now as we've expanded, we have the issue, like you talked about, where we have people who, you know, got put on forensics because they were hurt, or because one officer even said, you know, this is a young guy who knew how to use the coffee machine, so he's now the forensic guy in the lab.
That'll teach him.
Exactly.
Or, you know, advice to anyone in policing, use the coffee machine and make sure people see you doing it.
Exactly. But we do have to cater to that wide difference of skills. And so a lot of the assets, you know, that we made before that were just for that very technical examiner who was buying it just for internet artifacts, we had to do a shift, and we've really focused on this. So all our data sheets now have one page of very high level benefits or use cases and how people have used it that would cater to the absolute lowest technical level or someone who is not involved in forensics very much, so they could easily, you know, convince their superior or understand themselves, oh, this is what this tool does. These are the easy identifiable benefits and use cases of the tool. And then the back page of our data sheets now go into a lot more technical detail of what we can find and how we do it. So you give something to the more technical person, but the upfront page is just a lot more of a simplified version. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one way we've tried to blur the lines between that very new junior examiner versus the experienced one, or the person in the lab versus the person who they need to convince to buy it. They can just show them that front page and say, this is why I need this tool.
So a couple of interesting points I was thinking when you were saying that. One is you separated between the user and the buyer, and then you mentioned how your collateral, your data sheets speak to both, but in separate sections.
Yeah.
Right? So sort of like top of the iceberg kind of thing is here's what it does and the business benefits, but you know there's going to be a technical evaluator, and so you have to answer those questions as well. And I guess the second point that you alluded to sort of at the end there was having all that material let someone internally, like if you have a champion, share it, build influence, explain why, you know, what it does and why Magnet is the best, and address those technical questions that are coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, one of the main drivers for why we changed our sheets from being almost two pages of kind of more technical detail to just being one and one more of a higher use case was just exactly what you said. Champion said, if I want to take this to my lieutenant or my captain to buy it, like, he doesn't understand when you talk about picture carving techniques or hash set values or why those are important.
Yeah.
He wants to know, can I find the chats? Why should I use this tool? Does it find more pictures? What does it find differently than other tools?
I want to buy it. Help me convince others to sign the check.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess that brings us to something near and dear to my heart, the very nebulous concept of messaging. What does messaging mean to you?
Wow.
Putting you on the spot here.
It's a bold question. I think in terms of product messaging, I think it's just really all about being very, very clear and concise and being able to explain exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. And in as clear language as you can do. Like, I think from all my jobs that I've done here, I think I've learned, or in my past, I've learned that you just need to be as less is more, I guess, is the gist. And it needs to be very clear that anyone can understand it regardless of their level. Or
George Orwell's writing guide, never use a long word when a small word will do.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like I said before, in this current job, some of our customers have no idea what forensics are and they just got thrown into it.
Mm-hmm.
But they are the forensics person in rural Texas or rural Oklahoma. And
it's a bit scary to think of as a as a citizen.
I mean, maybe, I guess, but I mean, they are getting the tools and learnings eventually. It's just, you know, everyone starts somewhere, kind of like our talk earlier in the conversation, like you never know where your career is going to start off. You know, they do need to understand things, and no one has an appetite to read a lot anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like you need to do everything. You need to explain what your product is and why it's important and how it will help you within about half a page, or else no one's ever going to buy it.
Yeah. And interesting as well, just the things we were talking about that you just mentioned, sort of the people coming in without that technical skill set. And you mentioned kind of in the beginning the characteristics that make Magnet's solution different. You know, it's combining these different pieces of technology, but also doing it in such a way that the answers, or the artifacts, as you call them, kind of bubble up.
Yeah.
Don't need to be, oh, I'm an expert in, you know, a FAT32 file system, or I know exactly where the admin files are, anything like that. It's, oh, there's the stuff I need, even though I'm not a technical user.
No, exactly. I think that's been part of our entire message, and our main value prop is just, we're just known as a company that kind of in the Apple sense of it just works. People just say, you know, I want all my forensic tools to be like the magnet way. Like do this the magnet way of doing things where I don't need to do that deep diving or do 2 weeks of intense file system classes to find this evidence. Can you just make an artifact so I can quickly look for it? If you're going to court, you'll have to validate that it is in fact there in the files. But, you know, the ultimate goal is to find what you're looking for in our business and get a plea or get someone to admit wrongdoing in the interview.
Yeah.
So having that evidence surface up to you right away is so key because, you know, it shows up right away. And when you're in the interview room, you can say, what about this picture or what about this document that we found on your computer?
Yeah, that makes the whole judicial system more efficient.
Exactly, yeah.
You're turning those wheels of justice. On sort of a note, we've talked a bit about content, a bit about messages. How do you get those in front of your prospects into your market?
So our market is it's a bit unique with the law enforcement side because sometimes some of our customers won't actually, I was joking with you at lunch, some of our customers won't actually give us their names if they're in some of the three-letter agencies or their emails, and they'll say things like, hey, you can call me John. That's what we'll go with.
If you have a buyer persona, I hope it is named John. And it's just a silhouette.
Silhouette with an old school 1950s detective hat. No, it definitely is a challenge to get content in front of some users that we like I said, a lot of our big customers and intelligence agencies around the world won't give us their contacts.
Yeah.
So we have to do a lot of things like public webinars.
like a dead drop.
Almost.
We've dropped the collateral at the bench.
so we do actually have to do a lot of, those users actually have, they've told us, like, you know, we have fake Twitter accounts or social accounts. So a lot of them like, we push things out on social a lot and just have a lot of public webinars, public white papers, public videos on how to use the product where people can just watch and learn about the product that way.
Yeah.
And then on the corporate side, I think it's pretty standard. They're used to.
You're helping them learn about it and you know that they're going to take themselves as far through the process as they want.
Yes.
And then finally they'll be like, you don't know me, but I want to buy your stuff. Yeah.
A lot of the times, yes. And then also our sales team will push, you know, internally and say, hey, we're doing this webinar. Can you send this to the people on your team if they want to learn about, you know, X? We do have to rely a lot on our sales team to really push these things.
A lot of IT is coming from Langley.
Potentially. Well, a lot from Virginia.
that's you know, very neat because a lot of, you know, B2B is all about understanding, you know, buyers, and really relationship selling traditionally has been a big thing. And there's a trend now moving away from that and enabling self-serve through content and through understanding the processes your buyers are going through.
Yeah, I definitely agree. One thing, sorry to just go off on a bit of a tangent there, but I think in our industry, so much of this is about word of mouth, because when you're dealing with big cases, whether it's a murder case or an anti-terror case or whatever, you know, these are high-profile cases, and no one's going to use a solution that hasn't been tested or someone hasn't said, you know, I really like this or this helps solve this problem for me. So we actually do focus a lot on what you said before, on once we have a champion, on, you know, asking them, hey, can you tell other people in you know, your department or other departments, or would you be willing to do a closed door speaking session with us on a road show? Because when I say it, I'm just, you know, the product marketing guy. But when you get someone from a big agency that says, this helped me on this case, I solved it, I was able to find evidence I couldn't find before. So we do a lot of kind of road shows with guest speakers, or when we have events, we'll bring people from the industry that have that reputation, tell the audience how they used our tool. And that's kind of been our big driver, just because no one is going to use, or no big agency is going to use, an untrusted or unknown tool on a big high profile, you know, murder or CE or you know, human trafficking case.
So the bringing people who have that credibility, validating the points that you've made, and really relying on that community. And I mean, the organizations work together, you know, they interoperate already, sharing evidence, if not actual techniques. So
And
saying good things about you are very good.
And I think, you know, we're in a bit of a unique spot too, because Jad, our founder, was a digital forensic examiner who built the tool. So he brings himself a lot of cred to the industry. So everyone likes to hear him talk and his story of, you know, he basically built the tool because he said, I was trying to get internet evidence and there was no good tool out there. So I built my own.
That explains why the mug you provided me with water says JAD on it.
That is correct.
I understand that things move pretty quickly here, just from, you know, keeping in touch with you over the past year and a half. There's a lot going on, releases, products. How do you stay organized and effective with that much going on, whether it's a little release or a big launch or just, you know, you mentioned a lot of the things that you came in and did upon arriving here?
You know, it's definitely tough because there are a number of products, and I think a lot of this just has to do with some lessons learned from my Sandvine times with you. I think taking things like building launch plans for major releases and kind of understanding what the gaps were, what needed to be done for each launch. So looking, each month you can't do that, but for big launches where you know, like being in touch with the product team to know what's coming and when, and whether it's just kind of a small release where you're just going to need to send out, you know, a quick blog post and tweet versus a big one where you're going to go through a full plan and look at, do we need new videos? Do we need to update all the sheets and collateral? Do we need to do an hour session with all the sales teams around the world? Mm-hmm. And just kind of looking at, you know, a full kind of template of all the different activities you would do for a launch. I think that's been probably the most valuable thing that I kind of learned from my time at Sandvine, is just going through that kind of launch checklist and looking at what needs to be done. And then also from the pragmatic point of view, just looking at, you know, if we do have something big, is this a major problem everyone's got in the industry or a minor problem? And if it's a major one, then we'll probably need to do a big splash, like mm-hmm. looking at how often it comes up and how much of a problem it is, how much time this is going to save someone. When you look at kind of the pragmatic view of the market problem, and if you hit on something big, then you need to do a lot more around that. So I've kind of taken it based on working with product and looking at what they're releasing to determine the amount of effort to put into it, just because, you know, with monthly releases for multiple products, you can't do that.
And you have to know as you're building up a content library, what pieces mention what, right?
Yeah.
You almost either writing it down or tagging or having just sort of an encyclopedic knowledge of all the pieces, especially if you've created them or been involved in their creation. That's yeah. a bit easier. But then, you know, you mentioned the launch process. A large part of that was just a very comprehensive list of like 50 questions. Have you asked yourself this question? Yeah.
No, I mean the original launch template that you provided us at Sandvine. I know I've tweaked it a bit, but it's been very helpful as a guide to kind of understand, you know, have I forgotten this, like you said, or do I need to add certain things? And especially now that we're doing more than law enforcement and going into corporate, you know, now questions come in like, do you need to talk to an analyst about this? Do you need to, do something? Do you need to go to a different conference? We recently launched memory analysis capabilities for computers, which is big for root cause analysis in a corporation after an incident. So do you need to start going to like different conferences as opposed to LE1s? Do you go to RSA or do you go to some of the security conferences or the Gartner shows and things like that? So you really do
your competitive intelligence because you have a new capability.
Exactly. And I think a lot of that you can learn too from your sales team, because they're going to be your eyes and ears on the ground. If you can't get out and talk to every customer all the time, you really do need to probe that team and say, when you go out and talk to the customer about this, whether it's law enforcement or corporate or a consultant, like what are they saying? What resonates when you do your pitch?
Yeah.
And then that helps guide you as well with that kind of launch plan of, okay, we know that this is really resonating with the corporate audience, we really need to put some speaking points around it or make that the headline mm-hmm. with this group. And then with this group, we need to focus on something else.
Yeah.
And I think that's really key, is really making sure that you take your sales team's feedback and just have that open relationship mm-hmm. with your sales team. And I think we have that here, where they're not just demanding everything for everyone all the time. They're actually giving constructive feedback mm-hmm. on, you know, this is a problem I've run into multiple times now. You think we could address it with a video
like
or
customer
content?
Customer keeps asking this question.
Yeah, like
how do we answer it, or could we answer it proactively?
Yeah, and I think a great example of that is, you know, some customers have said, we want to be able to bypass passwords on Android devices. We know you have the capability, but, you know, we can't train everyone on how to do that. Can you just have some how-to videos for each technique? So mm-hmm. then we created how-to videos for each technique, and we did a webinar on it, because it just kept coming up over and over again.
Yeah, and that scales,
yeah.
right? Rather than 100 individual conversations.
Yeah.
I like content that has a long shelf life and addresses a particular strategic or tactical issue.
Exactly.
It's much more effective. In October, Magnet announced an acquisition of Sentinel Data. Were you involved with that at all?
I was, yeah.
And are you able to share in what capacity?
I did some interviews, of the company beforehand, just to kind of understand, after the decision was made. I did some interviews before we announced publicly of what their customers were using the product for, what they thought the biggest value was, what the problem was that they had that led them to the company. So really taking that kind of pragmatic approach of understanding the market problem, how Sentinel, well, actually Atlas is what the product that we use for case management is called. So Sentinel is the company, Atlas is the product. So understanding why they had a case management issue, how Atlas solved it, what the biggest use cases were for it, and then that helped drive, what we pushed out for our messaging. It helped, fill the gap of the portfolio for understanding how it fit in with the other suite of Magnet products, so customers could instantly know, okay, so Axiom's for the forensics, but before you get there, someone needs to submit evidence in their case management system that leads you to the forensics tool, tips the examiner off that there's new evidence, and then so they could understand, why they would need both in the portfolio and how it benefits what they already have.
Okay, so building, I guess it's extending the workflow and the stages in an investigation that they can use your tool for?
More so it's about, the main benefit for it was actually keeping the chain of custody. Oh. So as soon as someone got a phone, understanding.
I'm laughing because of all the chain of custody appeals with performance enhancing drugs in sports.
Yeah.
Oh, chain of custody. Nope.
Yeah. Honestly, it's a big thing. So being able to track that. So most companies most companies and law enforcement agencies have this free tool called Excel and a terrible macro that people have to fill, forms out in. And it doesn't always work, and it's not great for reporting, and it doesn't do a great job if someone bypasses it and just emails something in or faxes a note that says, dump this phone.
Okay.
So that was kind of the industry problem. Like, there was no great tool for case management. And, Sentinel had a great tool called Atlas. And so, from the moment the investigator seizes the phone at the scene and then they submit it to the lab with, hey, we need you to dump this phone. We're looking for the chat history, communication between X perp and X suspect, and then all the pictures and contacts on the phone. And then the lab gets it, and then they can track it, and then the investigator detective can follow along with, the stages of, okay, the device, we've dumped it, we've got the evidence, now we're processing it. Once we process it, we'll put it in a review platform so you can look at it. Mm-hmm. The detective, whereas before they had no idea what was going on, now they understood, okay, they've got it, this is the timeline, I should get it back in a week, and then I'll be able to do my review and then coordinate with them back and forth, on looking for the evidence that I need.
Okay. I can see why that was a great addition to the Magnet portfolio. Was that the only acquisition you've been involved with?
No, we actually made a purchase of a company called Trax Inspector recently as well. And that is the review platform I just kind of alluded to. So basically what that does is there are so many forensics tools that a agency, whether corporate or law enforcement, use, and they all have a different review system for the non-technical person to come and review the case. So after you extract the evidence from, computer, cloud, or phone, and you process it and put it into the artifacts, you need something to review it, because the examiner doesn't really know what the case is. Like, they could just be told, dump this phone, dump this computer, and not know if it's a drug case or, a human trafficking case or whatever. So then the detective or investigator needs a simple way to look at that evidence and say, hey, this is key, this is key, this is key. And then once the examiner knows that, okay, these five or six things, that's what they're looking for, then they need to prove the attribution that the suspect knowingly, got those files, because the most common defense is, it was a virus. I don't know how that got there.
My Twitter got hacked.
So you need to prove, they were logged in, they were doing this, these were the programs that were open at the same time. It was transferred in sync between four of the person's cloud accounts and their computer, just to kind of get that attribution if it were ever challenged in court.
Okay.
And so the review platform really makes it simple, because it takes all the tools out there into one platform. So instead of needing to learn 5 to 10 different tools to review your evidence, it all integrates into one easy-to-use platform.
Yeah, so you're consolidating that and making everyone's life easier with better results.
Exactly.
Okay. As we speak, you have a job posted for a product marketing manager. And I'm just curious, what are some of the things that you're considering as you build out the team? You mentioned you were the first product marketer here.
Yeah.
You know, marketing's continuing to expand, and what are you keeping in mind as you do that?
Yeah, I think mainly there's a few main things I'm looking for. Definitely I want someone who has kind of that market problems-based approach to marketing, because I really do believe in that. Having done 5 of the 6, I think, pragmatic marketing courses, I think it does give you a great base for understanding, you know, how you should be pushing your product or what you should be building and promoting.
So not just shouting about your own technology?
Definitely not. Okay. Definitely not. So someone who has that similar viewpoint, I think, would be an absolute must. Something else that I think is very, very important to me, and I think I take this actually from having worked with you. I want someone that has complementary skill sets to my own. You know, I think I have a pretty good background in writing content. So if someone had, you know, more of a digital or campaign building background, that would be very helpful. If someone had, you know, a portfolio pricing background, that would also be very helpful. I'm looking to kind of, you know, I know we're looking to build a team with different skill sets around that. So we all have a base in that pragmatic kind of viewpoint, but we have strengths in different areas. So, you know, whether that be very technical in the forensic arena, whether it be on the digital, you know, lead gen side, or whether it be on the, you know, the pricing portfolio management side, I think those would be great assets to complement more of the content writing side that I bring in addition to the product.
So a common sort of knowledge foundation and philosophy towards understanding customer problems and assessing their importance, but then a diverse skill set to actually kind of get stuff done.
Definitely. Yeah, because I think to, you know, our old Sandvine team, and there was 5 people on it, and each brought a core base, like you said, but they each had, you know, a unique attribute or strength in a certain area that they could be, you know, a SME in, or they could, you know, help the others turn up or better their work.
Yeah, I always liked how whenever we had people who had, you know, a real strength in one area, it sort of lifted up like the entire team.
Definitely.
So, sort of, hey, how do I do that? Or, you know, very, very collaborative in nature, and over time everyone of course got better at everything.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. In your opinion, you know, you've worked in Waterloo for how long?
10 years.
10 years.
10 plus.
Making the commute from the Royal City, along those dodgy back roads. So you've experienced quite a bit. You have a lot of friends in the community. What are some of the most significant or common challenges that you think are facing B2B tech companies, either in general or specifically with regards to marketing?
I think one of the challenges, actually, selfishly, is I think that there's a definite shortage of actual product marketing talent in the region, because it is kind of a unique skill set. One of the things I've noticed in talking to other companies and even recruiting for the roles, the role that we have here at Magnet, it's a lot of people are too technical, a lot of people aren't technical enough, and it seems like it's very hard to blur the line to find someone who can do product marketing. And that's why I've seen, you know, a number of people have asked me, do you know someone great in actually product management as well, in product management or product marketing? Mm-hmm. And there just does seem to be a real challenge in getting the right person there, because it is, you know, a rather desired field. Mm-hmm. As people start scaling up and want someone to kind of own that product and own, you know, from inception of the idea all the way to delivering the launch.
Yeah.
And it's a unique skill set that I think there's a definite shortage of, and that's why it takes a while to fill these posts.
It's interesting as well, because as I mentioned at the beginning, like in my first question, product marketing means different things to different people and organizations. And I think for anyone looking at doing a product marketing hire, it's, you know, you can have whatever definition or understanding you want, but you have to know what it is that you want and what's going to fit in your organization. It might be a more general role where you're pulling together a lot of different pieces. You're a linkage between sales and product management and sales engineers and customers, and you're doing pre-sales activities. You're going into customer meetings, or it could be one which is a little bit more focused on content or a little bit more focused on market strategy. So figuring out whatever you need for your organization, and that'll help you refine your search.
Definitely. And I think, too, having worked in vastly different companies with different ideas of what product marketing is, I mean, some places product marketing is literally, you know, we've already built this, figure out a way to message this and make it resonate. Mm-hmm. Whereas in other places, you're in from the ground up, and determining, you know, bringing that feedback back right from the customer of, hey, this is a major problem. Have we looked at building something like this, or building something that addresses this problem? And then I think, you know, this is how we could grow it and launch it. So it really kind of depends in what area you are in product marketing. Mm-hmm. If you're doing something with an established product versus something brand new, I think you have a whole number of different challenges. Like if it's a very well-established product, you might just be updating, you know, the battle cards and the sales collateral, yeah, and sales enablement. Whereas if you're, you know, in a brand new market or positioning a new product in a new market, you're going to need to do the research on, you know, what the problem is, how prevalent it is, will people pay for it, how are you going to reach those buyers and customers, mm-hmm, and just kind of understand everything from the MPI process.
How do they like to buy? What questions, yeah, are they going to have?
How are you going to do a pilot to make sure what you've built works? When are you going to pivot if it doesn't work? Yeah. Or do you need to pivot or change your direction? So I think depending on where you are in the product cycle really depends on what you need in a product marketer.
Okay. And kind of related, what do you think B2B tech companies could be doing more of, or maybe should be doing less of, in the coming months and coming years?
You just keep asking very, very good, deep questions.
Should keep them for your interviews. Ask all aspiring candidates.
I think, and not to keep going back to the well, but it is something I do feel very strongly about. I think all companies need to do more of really going out to their customers and understanding what their problems are. I think there are far too many inside out products being built, whether it's B2B or B2C or whatever. Like, mm-hmm, people just think the technology itself will sell it, and technology on its own isn't a real product. Like, you need to find something that resonates, and you need to find something that matters, and you need to find something someone's willing to pay for.
And then use their own problem language when you talk about your solution.
Definitely.
Right, so even if you've started with a cool product or technology in your view, but it's not really moving off the shelves, and then you talk to your customers and you find out, oh, maybe they're not using it for what you intended it for, but they're using it for something else. That's a great piece of feedback. You can start talking about that as, you know, as a use case, and use their words. Don't try to correct them.
Use their words, or like I somewhat joked before, we did have a learning with the app icons. Like, a lot of officers came when we had this new data sheet filled with the chat histories we could find. They're like, oh, I need to find that one. The green one, you know, WhatsApp?
Yeah,
that's the one. And I need iMessage. Oh, that other green logo that you're familiar with? Like, just understanding your audience might not know the terminology that you use, especially, you know, if you're in North America versus EMEA versus APAC. Everyone has different terminology for what they're doing, and you need to make sure that, you know, you've catered to that market, because if you use pure North American acronyms and messages and process, you know, language, and try to sell it to someone in the UK, even though they do the same thing, it doesn't sound right, and they might think, oh, they don't really understand me at all.
Yep. Yeah, nothing. Well, you think about in our own experience, if people are using, you know, different words, it stands out in conversation, right?
Yeah. So
if someone says massage instead of massage, you think, well, this person's obviously British. They will order a bespoke suit next. So yeah, using their language, and I guess you can get that in conversations or RFPs in your industry.
Yeah, definitely on the corporate side and on the larger law enforcement side.
I always found RFPs are a great way to, it's literally the words your customers are using about the problems and things they're looking for.
Definitely.
So a pot of gold in terms of learning their own terminology, how they view things. You know, and you might look at it and go, you don't even know what you're asking about. And it's, well, in their view, they do. So there might be a knowledge gap or a perception gap mm-hmm. that needs to be closed, and this is your indicator that that's something you should look at.
And I think too, just building on that, depending on the size of the company, like a lot of the companies here start in Waterloo, and they may have someone from Waterloo that is responsible for a region that they are not living in and living and breathing in and understanding. So I think if you have that situation, you're going to need to find a partner there that can relay that feedback to you, or eventually get someone in that market. Because otherwise you're just kind of flying blind, and you're going to be totally, you know, Waterloo, North America biased, or Waterloo, Canada biased mm-hmm. from what I've learned. I mean, there's a huge difference from Waterloo than there is from, you know, deep south in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to have someone there that understands that market or understands how things are done and can walk the walk and talk the talk, it does make a big difference.
Yeah, no, those are really really interesting points. I understand you're a competitive water polo player.
I think I was. Not so much anymore.
Does water polo provide any lessons or metaphors for technology marketing?
I guess so. I mean, in both, sometimes, and especially from my time at BlackBerry, where things didn't go well for a while, you're going to have to go through some downs, and you're going to have to experience some failures in your career to know and learn, you know, what works, what doesn't work, what are the best things that you need to do. And you really just need to persevere. Like I remember in the BlackBerry days, just grinding it out for BlackBerry 10 and hustling and doing everything I thought was the right thing. And it probably was at the time, but you know, that didn't really pan out fantastically as a product. But, you know, just persevering and kind of getting through that and finding small successes and learning from looking back in hindsight of like, hey, you know what? I know we thought this was all the right thing, but we probably should have pivoted or done something a little different. And just being able to kind of get over some of the flops, because not all tech works, I think, is kind of the analogy. You know, in water polo, you could be drowned or just exhausted, or someone's just holding you underwater for a while.
You're
going to feel underwater for a while, but you have to be able to find it to get back up and look and learn what to do next so you're not put in that situation again.
Yeah.
I think is as clumsy a metaphor as I can come up with.
I really, really put you on the spot there. Warren, thanks very much for your time, sharing what you've been doing here at Magnet and all the lessons you've taken, and good luck with the hiring and with everything else you're doing here.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me and letting me talk on this hot podcast. And I look forward to seeing who's next.
Well, that wraps up episode 2. Once again, my thanks to Warren and to you for listening.